Welcome to Journeys of Empowerment. I'm Michiel Suchitrijd. This is a space for slowing down and paying attention to what is changing beneath the surface. Through honest conversations with aspiring impact-driven female founders, we explore the moments that reshape us, the questions that won't go away, and the choices that quietly alter the direction of a life. Sometimes the path that once felt right begins to feel a little too small, and something quieter but more honest asks to be trusted. These conversations live in that space. What if some of the things we've learned to accept as normal are actually the very things asking to be questioned? In this second rebellious female founder perspective, I sat down with Kasia Pokrop, founder of Embrace Health and someone whose lived experience has turned into quiet refusal to accept that women's health should remain an afterthought. What we explored wasn't really about hormones or healthcare. It was about what happens when you stop waiting for the system to catch up. We talked about motherhood, the startup world, and the moments that makes you realize that if the people who see the gaps stay silent, those gaps may never close. We also explored why women's health is still treated as a niche issue. Who gets a seat at the table when decisions and investments are made, and how real change often begins when ordinary people deciding they won't look anywhere away. At this point, Kasia puts it simple. If women like me don't do something about it, nothing is ever going to happen. And this one stayed with me. You don't need to have ovaries to care about women's health. Say what? You don't need to have ovaries to care about women's health. Maybe that's what this conversation is really about. Not just changing a system, but changing the quiet assumptions we've all learned to live with. Let's go. Welcome, Kasia.
Hey, thank you for having me here.
Yes, for the second time.
Always happy to be back.
Yeah, lucky you're here. Hey, and this is the second bi-monthly episode of the Rebellious Female Founder Perspective. Are you ready?
Always ready.
Always ready. Born ready, right?
No pressure.
No pressure. Hey, before we dive in, the guiding questions for today to go through are three questions. The first one is, what is the change you would love to see in corporate space?
All right.
And then we will move to three simple layers. What are you seeing in your field today that others may overlook or accept? What you believe is missing or misaligned beneath the surface? What change you feel called to stand for, and what it would take to move towards it? It's not literally been asked. Guided each other based upon our previous call. But it is a sort of navigation to three layers and see if we can steer the rebel in you today. And to do that, I would love to get you back in the mindset of 2022 at Antler. Take us back, and you came home and asked, what the hell am I doing here? What happened in that room? But before we start, maybe also, why were you in that room? Mm-hmm. And then what happened?
I got into... it's a strong start, so thanks for that. I got into the Antler cohort, which was over the summer. Friend recommended. She knew what I was doing, what I was busy with. And she's like, hey, you have to try it. You have a good product. You've been doing so much. It's a perfect place for you. And it was a friend who also went through that. She got a funding with them. So I felt like, well, you know, like, why not? Let's try it, right? Like, I had zero reasons not to go. So if that happens, usually I go. So I was in that room, and indeed it was 90% men and like a few women here and there. I think I was the only mother. like the average age was about like 25, maybe 28 or so, like definitely not much above 30. I was like approaching my 40, you know, matter of two. And they all were talking about blockchain and crypto and artificial intelligence. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing here? As Mira, like, why did you send me here? Literally. And like, you know, I came there at that time was with Mama Moon, was all about pregnancy and hormones and birth and postpartum depression. And I got home and I spoke to my husband, like, literally, like, Robin, like, what the fuck is crypto? I didn't know. And that was it. And I was like really wondering, like, should I even go back? Like, how are you with an Antler cohort? You are supposed to find a co-founder, form a team, right? And so that was pretty clear. Like, I met people that I liked, but it was pretty clear, like, that the chances of like finding a co-founder in the group with like only men talking about blockchain and crypto and multiplying it and God knows what, where I came with an impact and health for women's and hormones, it, like, okay, that's gonna be a challenge. But I did go back.
Mm.
So
what made you go back?
Well, I realized that in this room there are also people, those are places, that program which defines where the money will flow, where the impact will go, where the focus will go when it comes to innovation, the next steps. And I thought, like, if I'm not there, where I already have two kids, right? I was not planning to go for another little one. So you kind of like, you know, I had my experience. I spent my time in corporate before I had my network. I kind of was settled to, it was still intense. I mean, the kids were still small, but I was kind of like seeing that light at the end of the tunnel in my private life that could combine also the professional. If I don't go back, if women like me, if they don't go back to those places, then those places miss women representation of the topics that are important to us, which is health, which is impact, which is, you know, whatever it is that is driving us. But if we are not in those rooms, then that voice is not being heard. And yeah, then then we will only hear about blockchain and crypto left and right. So like, yeah, so that was the reason why I got back.
Then you got back. And how did it work out?
Well, it was a journey. It was intense. I actually found a co-founder outside. So I got her in. We went through the program. It was within the program. It is a good program. You have to, let's say, like, you have to give it to it. And we got guidance as well. And was they accepted us as a team. They accepted us as a topic. They helped us to fine-tune the product as well. And then you pitch from every week. And you either kind of like every week you pitch, you either go through, you are out. So, yeah, it was the final pitches. We were there. So in this sense, let's say we managed to fine-tune the product. It was a hell of a learning.
Mm.
For someone like myself who had like zero contact with startup world whatsoever. And I remember myself thinking later, like, you know, would I do it again? And because it was intense. It was over the summer. I was in Poland. I was flying kind of in and out. So Alina at that time, she had a 12 weeks old baby at home.
Oh, wow.
So it was also quite intense on her as well. But yeah, I would do it again with like a, not even thinking, with a blink of an eye, because hell of a learning, and also showing you maybe things which I haven't seen before.
Mm. So like first time founder, so who can blame you, right?
Yeah.
It's a steep learning curve.
Yeah,
and even if you're a second time founder, we still are in the learning stage and phase, right? And is there a sort of one or two biggest learnings for you about yourself, for instance, in that program?
Well, I've learned that to put my pride in a pocket.
What do you mean by pride?
Well, if you are a female founder,
mm-hmm.
If you are setting up for venture focusing on women's health and you hear that the product that is essentially my third baby, right? Mm-hmm. You can take it personal. You hear things that, hey, this is a niche product. I mean, for it's a product for like 50% of population, but it's a niche product. Or you hear things that, you know, you should mail up when you're pitching. You kind of have to put it aside and not focus on that and focus on what actually brings value. So that was for me, in a sense, like, okay, I'm not going to just sit here and like cry because you don't like this and that. Actually, the feedback that you gave me here, it's brilliant, and I will focus on that. So that was, because the end goal that I put in front of myself was to make that venture happen, mm-hmm. is to bring that product to the market. And yeah, if you stay there, if you just gonna, you know, be sad because somebody said something which is not nice, yeah, did I like it? No, I didn't. But you kind of have to move on. So so that was...
It's often easier said than done, huh?
Yeah.
So what helps you to not let it block you and get in your way and get your ego fired up? Instead of that, you take it, you think yeah. about it. But what helps you in that process?
Well, you see the end goal. Ah, you yeah. know what is your end goal. And then you see that you're moving in that direction. So in this case... and. So that was for me really something which, yeah, I think in the past, if I would think about my, you know, 25 or 30 years old self, I would have maybe taken some of those things a little bit more personal, or you kind of like overthink it, and you didn't have time to overthink those things. It was like, you know, we are going there. You have that much time. You have to do this and that and to be there, and you know exactly where you're going. Yeah, so you go there.
Sounds like a profound learning, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was really learning on the go. And that's the other thing, that you you learn the most by doing, by experimenting, by staying also close with people who will be either using whatever it is that you are building. And that was also the other learning, because we pivoted a lot as well. Mm. So it's not like, you know, we may have this idea in our heads, and but maybe that's not necessarily what people want.
Maybe it's good in this stage of our conversation to a little bit elaborate on Embrace Health, formerly yeah. Mama Moon. Let's start with the initial ID. Mm. What was the initial ID about Mama Moon?
Yeah, so with Mama Moon, we started with addressing women during pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. And the goal was really to deliver a program which is focused on the mother, because everything out there is very much focused on the baby. Mm-hmm. So it's just like that. Everybody cares about the health of the baby, how the baby is growing, and there's very little attention to the mom, to the health, to whether it's physical or mental. And as a result, 20% of women nowadays, they experience postpartum depression. This is what we know. And so that was, let's say, the goal was to prevent, minimize the risks of birth trauma, which is like one of the biggest causes for postpartum depression, so that we can also minimize that, the mental health, so that women simply feel healthier. And that was the idea. We designed the program more for B2C initially. And that was another learning that, well, it is busy in that space in mm-hmm. the end. So we looked at, okay, we already have a product. Where can we bring it to add value? There was one way to go, either hospitals, because we can, let's say, if women are healthier, we are minimizing the risk of interventions. We are minimizing the risk of whether emergency C-sections, because somebody has a better birth, right? But then you need to go medical, and that's also costly. And then we look at the organizations, at the companies. So having, let's say, the network before with some of the HR colleagues, and then learning, oh, yeah, indeed, we do invest so much in having more and more women in the management positions, in the key roles. But then they become moms, and they don't come back to the initial roles. Mm. So it was a pain. So that was how we pivoted towards the B2B space. And then also staying very close here in the Dutch space within B2B. It is a smaller market, maybe if we would be in the US, where you have a bigger market. Everybody speaks the same language. we could be with a very niche proposition just for those, that period of women's life, pregnancy, birth, postpartum. But here we would continuously hear, well, if we give those benefits for women who are pregnant, we need to have something also for the younger, for the older. So we can't just give the benefits for this one small group of women. And that was where we started, well, actually, with the network of experts that work with us closely. Yes, they also work with women who are pregnant, but they also work with women who go through perimenopause or menopause. They work with women with PMS, PMDD, PCOS issues, or now PMOS. So it's we started delivering those sessions in the companies, mm-hmm. which were on the broader women's health, hormonal health at work, or sometimes also very specific, like perimenopause, menopause, linking it to work, to the benefit. And that's where the name of Mamamoon didn't fit anymore, because not every woman is a mom, not every woman wants to be a mom or can be a mom, became a trigger. So that's where we also moved to Embrace Health, making it as an umbrella
yes.
for the three M's, menstruation, motherhood, and menopause. So it was really a journey. It was really a journey of staying close with women that we had in our network and also organizations that we would either work with or have those conversations with to be able to address women's health at a broader scale. And let's say in the background, we are also busy with digital tools for the menopause as well. But we already can do things, so we are doing it. So not also waiting for the moment where you have everything ready and it's perfect.
And there's something in that. And that waiting, that is something that if you have to think about waiting, yeah. that does something with you, right?
Oh, yes.
As a person. Because you once said, if women like me don't do something about it,
yeah.
nothing is ever going to happen. When did that responsibility become yours?
Well, I looked at my daughter. And I just thought I can't not do anything. I mean it's, you know, it's the part of it, I can't fix everything, but there's a lot that I can do. And I do feel that all of us, there is a lot that we can do. It doesn't have to be fixed by the system. So, you know, when I was a kid and if something was off, I would go to my mom and she's like, oh, don't worry, it's normal. And in a way, it gives you a little bit of like, okay, you know, she says it's normal, so I have nothing to worry about. But it doesn't mean that the pain goes away
no.
or the discomfort goes away. Just knowing it's normal, like you still have that pain, you still have that discomfort. So that's where I thought, I can do better with Lily. And if I can do better with her, probably the girls who are with her in the class, they could use that care as well. So that's a little bit where, you can do it. Even just by conversation, just by influencing the circle around you, we can do a lot. And yeah, that's why I don't want to wait.
the so-called ripple effect, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it works. It's, I mean, you've been experiencing it as well, but we've had so many people who became sort of part of that community, that movement around Embrace, where we bring the women's health awareness in the spotlight, whether by sessions that we organize ourselves, whether it's part of the bigger conference or so. And they come back, they bring others, they talk about it. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. Because that really feels like a wave.
Yeah. It is, and I'm witnessing it. The first time was 15 women,
yeah.
and now we're approximately around 100, and a healthier mix. It's
yes.
becoming a little bit more healthier
yeah.
mix when it comes to also men. So to all men, ally. Please come to the 24th, but we will come there in this conversation. And what are you seeing in women's health today that many people simply accept, but you refuse to accept? What is the status quo? What is a sort of big acceptor problem that you refuse to accept?
Well, there is a. It starts with that sentence, this is normal. So it starts with us feeling off, going to the house arts, to the GP, and then hearing this is normal, stay home, take paracetamol. And that can be for different reasons, right? For some women, this is around PMS, so around menstrual health. For some women, it's a bit more deeper, going into PMDD. There's a huge disconnect where I see around perimenopause and menopause. It's huge. We had so many women that they would be either diagnosed with burnout or depression, put on antidepressants, and only in the sessions like our session or similar session somewhere else, but we had those women in our sessions that they would learn from listening to the others, listening to the experts, to people asking questions, sharing stories. They would learn about symptoms of perimenopause, for example, which right now can start as early as 35. And when it starts, it's not the hot flashes that we see in the movies, it's the cognitive changes. So it's forgetting the words, is the brain fog, is anxiety, suddenly things become bigger. It looks like depression, but it's actually hormonal changes. And one of the reasons why they are put in this burnout box or depression box is also that the medical system has not yet been taught mandatory about the symptoms of the perimenopause or menopause. And those are the stories that I also repeatedly hear from, even from GPs here in the Netherlands. It was only a year ago when I was sitting in the event, and then that GP, she basically said, until I was going through the perimenopause myself, I would send every woman who would come to me asking, maybe this is it, I would tell her, sorry, but you still have a period, cannot be it, and with a different treatment. So there is that gap, which on one hand, it does need to happen also from the healthcare professionals, but it will happen faster if we start asking for it. If we don't accept that this is normal, if we ask the right questions, if we go prepared for those meetings, if we share, if we know, for example, that there is a scale of, I believe it's 21 questions, and if you score 12 out of those 21, you have to be checked for the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause, but you have to know about it.
And but for instance, where are those 12 questions? Where can we find
it?
You can
look it up online even. So it's really like the, I work closely with Dr. Dio.
Yes.
And she's a medical doctor, trained, practicing in the UK, based here in the Netherlands. UK is like 3-4 years ahead of us, and that's kind of normal when it comes to those topics.
Why do you think that is?
Next year, 2027, in the UK, they're going to introduce obligatory for companies, for example.
Yeah.
There's going to be obligatory policy for menopause. So every company with 250 employees or more needs to have an active policy about the menopause in the workplace. Mm. So we are not there yet.
Nope.
And that's just one of the examples. So it's, if you look also, let's say, at the incubators, at the NHS, at let's say the funding that goes there, the angel funding is also differently set up, much more easier to become an angel investor in the UK rather than here, safer, let's say. So they are simply ahead. So we look at them and try to bring also those sparkles in everything we do.
Mm-hmm. And if you had to point, let's say the biggest misalignment, where would you point first? Research, education, healthcare, or leadership?
Can I do all of them?
Well, you can start with maybe, is there a clear number one?
With lack of money in research, right? But where is this lack of money? It's all like a chain. Because there is no money going into the research of women's health. That means that many doctors, even if they would wish to give us diagnosis or treatment, sometimes they can't because there's not enough research to actually say this will help you or this will help you or that will not help you, right? Now, the question is like, okay, so how do we get this money into research? And you have that whole leadership bit. as well, right? So it needs to be also mandated that this money should go there. And there is also that part of education, whether it's education on the side of the healthcare professionals, for example, catching up with the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause and stop putting us in a box of a burnout and depression, and rather testing for what it can be. But it's also education at school, right? Or
which age do you believe will be appropriate or appropriate to start with?
Well, so my daughter, she's now group six.
Group six, yeah.
Right? She's nine, she's going to turn 10. And in her class, so she came to me last week, hey, mama, there's a girl, she already had period.
Mm.
So it can be as early as 9 years old. And then you would wish that those girls, that they, you know, whatever we do at homes, then they get it from home. But you would also wish that some of those topics, they are not just as, because she did tell me like, the boys were asked to step out of the class and then the girls stayed with a teacher so that the teacher can explain to us what was actually happening. And that already says like, I didn't want to say anything, but I was like, okay, so first of all, it was like it happened. So then you have like it happened, hence we treat it. And then at the same time, because you don't really have it like structurally planned, right? Like the instinct tells you, because it's the first time that those girls will hear about it, then maybe they will indeed feel safer if they are with themselves. But then what happens with the boys? Like you would wish, you know, I also have a son. I would also wish that he is, you know, educated on those topics, that he's able to kind of have empathy, that he like understanding. I mean, it's just easier to live your life if you can feel like, okay, that's not even taking things personal because it's just the way that biology works, right?
So what would be your advice then to do to the school who chose to separate all the girls to have this conversation? What would be your advice?
I would love to have the like a program as a part of that education system. And it doesn't have to be, I think, complicated. Because, you know, they're quite... If I look at my daughter and, like, at her friends, you can have a nice conversation with them. You know, it's not like... They understand, they are a little bit more... They are different. I think I was more of a kid when I was that age. But they seem like you can really have, like, a normal talk with them. That they... So I think they are ready. I really feel like that that they would be ready to have that chat. And especially that, you know, imagine if that happens to you, it can be a little bit scary, right? And if you're not aware that that can happen to you. And then if, let's say, how you can also support each other as a group. So that would be just a very different start. But yeah, I mean, there are different priorities in everywhere, but...
And how far are we when it comes to education? There's still no education at all?
There is some bits, but that's also what I hear. It's a little bit later.
Mm.
And then also, let's say, so the middle school.
Oh, yeah.
That's where it starts a little bit more. But let's say in the primary school, there's not much. Or a little bit later. Again, it's all moving. I don't think that in the past group six, anybody would think that, you know, kids of the age of nine gets periods.
No.
That should be part of that education, right? Because that's really kids. But the biology is changing. And then you would also think like, okay, it is happening. So maybe we should also look at the program that we have now. And maybe we could think of adapting it also a little bit earlier.
Mm. Yeah. Is the biology changing?
It is. It is. It's the same as with... So it used to be, for example, menopause is that year when we stop having period, right? And then the 10 years before is it's like a shit show of all sorts of symptoms, which is called perimenopause. It used to be, let's say, 55. You stop having period, and then so 45 to 55, that this is your fun...
The messy...
The fun years.
The fun years.
The fun years. And now it can be as early as, let's say from 35 to 45.
Mm.
So that is, it is shift. And the period is an example as well, because it used to be maybe it was like 15, 13, 12 years. I mean, 9 years. It's early. Wow. And it's not so uncommon. No.
Mm. Let's bring it to the workplace.
Yay.
What do you think organizations still fundamentally misunderstand about women's health?
Well, that they can actually do something about it.
Something about what?
About women's health, about addressing it. The topics I often hear is like, am I in a position? I'm an employer, I'm a manager, like, am I in a position to talk about hormones or postpartum or... Are perimenopause or menopause? Shouldn't be something that women decide to have their own treatments? Like that they don't feel that we are kind of like putting something on them or phrasing it. And I get it, I understand it. But luckily we now have more data, so that we also know how that impacts our lives, but also our work. And that came also with the reports done last year by TNO, so the 80% of women being impacted by hormonal health in a negative way at work, mm. 1 in 3 hiding it. They put a number on it, how much could be saved if we actually address those gaps, because a lot of it is now seen in absenteeism and sick leave. So it is a little bit sad that you need to have those numbers out there to see it as women are taking twice as many sick leave days as men in the Netherlands. It's a fact that was all over the news also in March. It's a little bit sad that you have to see that
in
order
numbers.
To start correct yeah. acting. But you know what? Again, pride in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
We work with it. So yes, that the very first comment we often get, you know, we've never done anything like that. We don't know how that will be taken. They also feel like this is just for women. So we can't do something which is just for women, right? Because we also have men in the conversation, like in the company, which is another misunderstanding. Because if you have both men and women in the same room talking about women's health, I had a beautiful session. I was a speaker at one of someone's event, and then the guy came to me after. Never met him before. He said, "Like, Kasia, I need to go home now, but I couldn't leave without telling you. You opened my eyes. Thank you for that." So you know, I stood there and I was like, "Shit." He's like, and we had a conversation later on because we had a call after that. I really want to understand what is it that struck him so much. And he's like, yeah, I started understanding also the differences for myself in my personal life, but also with my colleagues. I really think that what you are doing, everybody should hear it, should know it. So that's the impact is huge, but you have to make that first step.
Mm.
You have to open the doors and to start the conversation. That's where it starts.
As a sort of conversation starter within the company?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's... people start... So the feedback we are getting is that even in the companies where you have healthcare professionals or organizations, even in the companies where you have highly educated men and women who already feel like, I feel like I live a healthy life, they all come back with, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Mm. Or I've learned that. Or like, I can actually, if I just switch those things, you know, then I can feel better. I can feel healthier. Or they become aware, like, oh, shoot, we had this person in the team. And there was like, now that I think back, probably she was going through this perimenopause, menopause. And if we would know, then we could have treated her better. So that is taking the taboo away, that we heard it so many times, sort of either in the feedback or I'm so glad that my company is not treating this topic as a taboo. I'm so happy that we can just talk openly about it, that it's not yeah, I don't have to hide it. That I feel safe to go and have a conversation about it at the coffee table or at the lunch or with my manager openly without having to pretend that I feel great when I don't. So that's it's not to create excuses. It's to create understanding, because if there is a moment where you feel, let's say, lower on your energy, we are made in a way that, you know, there are maybe a few days where you are lower, where you're a little bit more quiet, where, but then, you know, in few other days in a cycle, then you are like full on.
Fired
so
up.
Like, exactly. So like all together, it's same, same. But you, if you know what are your strengths in which period, or if you know also, if you are aware, like, oh, shoot, again, so taking, let's say, the period part that's more around the cycle, right? I mean, those days where you are a little bit stronger, then you can go for it. And then there are days like where you just don't want to talk to people. And maybe it's not that you can always do that, but yeah, then you can also use that for more analytical work. And so you can work with your strengths and deliver more. With perimenopause and menopause, it's a bit more... women often get lost because they don't recognize themselves, because they feel the symptoms, which it's not me. It's and it's scary, because suddenly you can't remember things, or you start sentence, you don't know where you're going with it. You wake up and you're anxious, and things that before were easier are harder. You can't sleep, which also doesn't help. So all of those things, if you... let's say if you are aware again that those might be the symptoms of perimenopause, you have it tested, there are treatments for it. But it all starts with, again, with that awareness. And treatments doesn't have to be always medication, can also be changing lifestyle. But there's just lack
for
of
sure. I vividly remember the I think that was the last women's health event in March, when I joined the round table of Sharon Asher.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a crash course on steroids. I learned so much about all things we think we know something about, and then all of a sudden how our only our own body responds to caffeine, for instance, or whatever. And it's all about awareness.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly. Like, if you know, then fine. If you take a decision which... may result in your body reacting in a certain way, but you're aware of it. You're kind of like, I know it, and I'm ready to live with the consequences, but I know it, and I know it's like normal. It's not something off. It's something that I created, maybe, in a good or in a bad way, right? But you have to be aware of it, and that awareness piece is where, which is still quite often missing. So,
Kasia, while we're progressing through our conversation, something, and you know me a little, I love to sometimes ask also a little bit the blunt questions, but you had a beautiful career, corporate career, at a beautiful corporate company, and yet you choose the path of becoming a founder, and entering the bumpy road of startup life in the women's health space. Why do you care?
Well, it's a good question. I think life would have been easier if I could, you know, just take holidays when I want to. And being able to switch off if I have to switch off, and not having to think about how to go from like 1 month to another to make sure that this company is kind of covered, and not being always having people that you can delegate, that you are not always the default one. It would have been easier. I'm not selling now the startup life, huh? But I remember two things. So the first one was when my daughter was little, and I was still working in corporate, and I had a team, I was working in digital health. It was still like a product which I really deeply cared about, But I was always late. I was always late at work because there was the whole thing, shebang in the morning that you had to do with a kid, right? Then I was late to pick her up. I would be late for meetings because I had to pump maybe in somewhere in the basement. I wouldn't be there, you know, for like my friends or the whatever. Mm. It was. I just felt like I was just guilty continuously. And I remember I sat down, like I was once sitting in the office, like, that time that I'm here is the time that I'm not with my daughter. Mm-hmm. Am I spending this time right? And that's when it kind of hit me that if I already decide not to be with her, at that time it was with her, I want to make sure that I'm spending time doing something that can add value to either my life or our life or somebody else's life. And with digital health, it was still there. Then that element went away. Corporate life is, it's a busy life, right? You know, there are things changing. And that's the other thing. They closed the business like a month before we're supposed to kick off the clinical trial. So basically I was working for, I don't know, 5 years on something that suddenly somebody decided, like, sorry, it's not going to happen. And 80 of us, you know, were just out.
Oh, wow.
And there was the other thing. I'm like, okay, so I've been working on something really hard on the weekends, on the evenings, and now just somebody else decides that this is not going to happen. Mm. That's not okay. So I want to be in charge of, I want to decide how I spend my time. I want to be in charge of what happens with that. If I decide not to continue it, it's going to be my decision, not somebody else's decision. And then I've tried, I really tried to go back to corporate, but I really couldn't get inspired by moving boxes from A to B or anyway. So it was really, that was the part which, how do I spend my life? How do I spend my time? The moment, and that only became to me so clear the moment that I had a kid. Mm. I think before it was not so strong there. It was more about enjoying life and having good time. But that was very clear picture. And the other moment was also what we shared, let's say, with Entler, with just sitting in that room and seeing how the decisions are being made, where the money is flowing, you know, pitching to investors continuously and seeing that I just spent so much time on explaining the problem because they don't understand the problem of women's health. There's no time to actually talk about the business case or about the, where the money is going. And I thought just about all of those women who are in a similar position as myself, you know, if you give up, then what's going to happen? Like trusting that the system will catch up? Like, I don't see that, you know, or like trusting that like one day you wake up and like, you know, the funding is flowing into women's health or like all the doctors are educated and there's a clinical research done and like the schools and the kids are, yeah, you know,
this is sort of the ideal outlook of the future, right?
Could be. But, you know, and still we're in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had this conversation also, right? Like, I was asked a couple of times, like, how would you envision the life in 2040 when it comes to women's health? I'm like, honestly, it's not that I don't care, but we are now. Like, we are now in this moment. I mean, it's, I want to be healthy. I want my daughter to be healthy. I want my mom to be healthy. I want to also understand, like, why certain things happen in my life. I think I told you before, like, when my daughter was born, I lost my contact with my mom.
Mm.
Only 2 years later, realized that when I was going through the whole postpartum, hormonal changes, name it, she was, like, in the midst of perimenopause and menopause. Mm. So it was like a, if we would have known, like, we probably would have been nicer to each other.
With more empathy.
Empathy and understanding and just again knowing it's biology, there's no stigma, you know.
More common understanding, yeah. Common language.
Correct. And that's also, let's say, seeing like happened to me and my mom, like we got back together, all is good. And we can now talk about it openly. And it's actually a much richer bond, probably. But could have saved a couple of years of, you know, strange connection.
A more personal question pops up. And since it's Journeys of Empowerment, it is, of course, also about our personal life. Where do you believe comes that intrinsic motivation to change something in the world? Where do you believe it's inherited or nurtured? Is it nature or nurture?
Oh, it's a good question. I think it's a combination of both. But I do feel like I can see some signs in me of my dad. You know, the lack of patience.
That I recognize about you.
I'm not going to wait. I'll just do it, you know. And it's so definitely, and I can see it now, you know, in my son. So my kids, they don't look like me. They're all very blonde, like very strong Dutch genes, you know. But I see those genes in them, especially in the mini one, the lack of patience. So there is some things of that, but I also truly believe it's like how you also go through life and the experiences that you're having. And part of it is, of course, you know, you get probably out of home, right? It's your first circle. Like my dad would always tell me, like, Kasia, you know, like, I had a very interesting teenage years, you know? So it was like, Kasia, I understand that you are that age and you're doing the things that you're doing. And you are my daughter. And I know that because you are my daughter, you'll be fine. But for God's sake, can you make it easier or just hide it better from the mom, from your mom? Because I can't stand those arguments anymore, you know? Like, so I was like, I know you'll be fine. I know that if somebody has to do it, it will be you. Can you just behave a little bit better towards her? Because I can't stand listening to her anymore. So it was kind of like, I got this trust from him. So that is also something nurtured, right? Like you have people around you who believe in you. But it's also through the experiences that you have. Let's say the life that you're going through, you know, the moments when you realize like, oh, this is why I'm doing something. Or this is like, you make those decisions, you know. I moved to Belgium for like a year when I was studying, and I remember I got up this one evening and I felt like I really felt so down, so alone, didn't know anybody, and I just looked in the mirror and I felt like, okay, I have two options. I can either sit here and cry, or I can just put on my makeup and go out and have fun and try to make some friends.
And you know? What did you do? What did you decide?
What do you think what I did, you know?
Well, looking at you right now, I believe I know the answer.
So it was really like those...
It wasn't boring.
No. Those are the moments where you kind of make those decisions, you know? And it was also... I have multiple of those because before I came to Amsterdam, I was also, you know, I was in Singapore. Was I happy there? But I decided to be happy, you know. I wasn't happy when I arrived, but I decided to find your way. So there's a lot of ways that, you make those decisions in life. It also depends probably the people around you. My dad always said, like, you need a mix, you know. You have to be equipped to live your life, but you also need to be a little bit lucky. And I feel, let's say, so that, you know, with people around, if I would say, like, in which way I was lucky, I think I was lucky, you know, with people around me. That was, you know, with either friends or, you know, with meeting Robin at the right time of my life, you know, with having, let's say, now people around me. So, yeah, they make you who you are. So in this way, yeah, you are also nurtured in a much, much bigger way.
Thank you, Sharon. Hey, this series is called The Rebellious Female Founder Perspective. What are you rebelling against?
Waiting. Accepting the norm. Accepting the sentence, this is normal. And then living with discomforts, with pain, with the fact that something will take time to be fixed for where was I? Where I saw it? Was it 123 years that I think I...
Yeah.
What the hell?
It will take 120 with the speed of now.
Yeah.
It will take 123 years to... and what was it about?
I think it was equity, proper equity. Yeah.
The equity, yeah.
And it's between men and women. But it was, I'm not going to be here. My daughter is not going to be here. And is it okay? No. And that waiting part, that acceptance that the system has been like that for so many years. I mean, screw that. Then you have to change that. I mean, we change. The biology is changing. Then, and that's the thing. That's why I feel like the companies, the organizations, they are empowered to change those things quicker. Because I understand that it takes time to change the policies in the country or in European Union or whatever. I get it. But if you are within the company, you can make those changes quicker. They are still going to take time, but you can make them quicker than the government, right? And then you go next level. If you are in your closest circle, right? Maybe it's not, let's say, the company, but it's a part of the company. Or if you look at your family, at friends, you know, each of us has a way to make that change. You know what I was actually recently really proud of?
No.
That was so cool. So it was Friday evening and we had a session. Well, we had an evening with like a few other families, right? Like the school families, and the kids were playing together. And at a certain moment, I looked at my kids and I was like, okay, you know, I take you home because you are tired. Robin stayed. And then he came back after a while and he said, like, you know what? We ended up being with 5 guys and somehow we ended up talking about women equality. And why is it that there is no equality yet? And I was there, I was like, fuck, I'm so proud. I was really like, I wish I was there in that room, of course, right? Like being like, probably I would have to very catch every word I say, because it's, and I was also like, here, like you work on yourself so much to be this like patient and like all the breathing exercises to kind of calm yourself down. And there are some topics where just doesn't work, but I was really proud. Those were like, you know, 5 guys, Friday evening. They could have talked about anything, you know, and each of them, they have a nice, you know, whether jobs or they work with organizations, right? So they can, that's where it starts. Yeah, this is the ripple effect.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, some of us, you know, we don't need to lead the companies or the governments or whatever. No. We all can be part of that change.
Change the system within the system.
Exactly.
Imagine your daughter at 35. Mm. What do you hope healthcare and society look like for her?
Well, I hope that... I actually really hope that by that time we don't even talk so much about the women's health or the men's health, but it's really the personalized health as well. Mm. I really hope that she went through those years with understanding what's happening in her body and why, and understanding, let's say, which part is, let's say, the biology, how the biology is impacting the mental health, so that she doesn't find herself feeling a little bit off, like many of us do, because you don't recognize yourself one day from another, and just being more observer, because you know that this is how it goes, and also you know how to influence it to feel better. And that comes also with knowledge, but it's not just the knowledge for her, it's really the knowledge for the society. So also, because you need that empathy, you need that understanding, and whether it's within, again, like your close circles of your relationships, but also within working relationships, right? So that it's that you get the most out of each other, rather than being punished, because there are some days which are a little bit not so great. So more awareness, more understanding, and also being more equipped, right? Let's say if the issue that we are now facing a lot is that there's a lot of diagnostic tools, but there's no treatment.
Mm.
So I would hope for her, let's say, so she's going to turn 10 this year, later, you know, so it's like in 25 years that it's not, we kind of also move from diagnostics also to treatment, to prevention, so that we...
So awareness and awareness on its own is not enough.
No.
That's what you're saying.
No, and also understanding the root causes if something is off. So if somebody doesn't feel okay, that it's not just, you know, giving the paracetamol because it's like putting a plaster or something, instead of being able to fix the root cause of an issue that makes you feel
in a certain way.
Correct.
Mm.
And that's, again, I feel it's like the physical health, but also the mental health, because that's a big part which...
Yeah, body and mind are one, right?
It's all one. It's all
interconnected.
It's all one. It's really, and you can be so much stronger when you can put it together as well. Yeah.
On the 21st of June,
yeah,
you are bringing a lot of people together around this movement, Women's Health. What do you hope happens in that room? And what do you hope, or who do you hope, would join the conversation? Maybe start a little bit with a brief outline about the 24th event.
Yeah, it's one of the favorite moments for me. We do it every quarter, and we bring together really the top experts in the field of women's health from the holistic health. So there's the clinical part, there's research part, there's also the mental health, the gut health, and we put them on a panel, and then we have the room full with people who either are passionate about the topic or curious for themselves, looking for answers. So that still very often happen, or they're curious for supporting others in their lives, whether it's their own relationships, friendships, or family, or also within the organizations that they are. It's beautiful. So it's, you can't script it. It's part of it. We do guide at the beginning. That's a little bit more like to break the ice. And then after that, we open for questions. So there's a lot of live questions, a lot of live sharing. You can't script it. It's really very much, every session is different because it depends who is attending this session. And it's the one thing that we have been proud of was to set the stage. This is a safe place.
Yes.
There is no judgment. And you can share, you can ask, you can comment, and the way that also feels true to you. And we've seen it. We've seen it multiple times. So that's something that we are very proud of. Those are the sessions that, I think this one will be number 11. And in every single one, I learn so much about either health or interactions or the key questions that people have. So for anyone who is attending, it's a lot of value on the spot, because you also learn a lot, but it's also that realization of so many times, like, oh, wait, is it going to have fun? This is normal, but it's actually not so normal. Or differently, like, maybe it is in a way, like, common, but there are ways that you can improve it or use the strengths which are there. And then also thinking, like, okay, if I'm sitting in a room which is, like, full of, people engaged, because I think that's also... People are very engaged in those sessions, and you feel it. It's like that energy before the chat, and then trying to put everybody kind of a little bit quiet so we can have the panel, then the questions start, and we can always, it's always a struggle to kind of finish it up, to leave the room, because it's there's just a lot to still continue. So people are very engaged. So if you see it, like you look around yourself, like, okay, you know, if all of those people here, if they are like, they have this energy and they are so curious about the topic, probably like if you work, for example, in a company, in an organization, or again, you sit at the table with your family, probably if, you know, those people around me at this table, they will be also interested in it. They may also have those questions, you know. Some people have eye openers again because they thought that, like, the depression and the burnout versus the perimenopause or similar ones. So it's, yeah, very much looking forward to it. And who do we want to have in the room? Well, everyone is welcome. What we've been working really hard now is to bring more men into the room, to the
conversation. Why should they care?
Because every man has in their life a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe for some of them it's a friend, it's a partner, it's a mom, it's a daughter, it's a colleague. But we all can relate. You know, someone once told me, like, you don't need to have ovaries to care. About women's health.
You don't need to have ovaries to care.
No, honestly. So, yeah, and we all can do something about it. So it's, I think that feeling, most likely you also live with that empowering feeling. Like, I can actually do something about it. I can actually be part of that change. And that's what we want people to live with. So, yes, the value, the knowledge, but also feeling, I can do that too, you know?
Last question for now. You have a magic wand. You have one strike. What is what you want to see? What the biggest change you would love to see in one day tomorrow?
I think what will help us a lot in that space is when you have from wherever is the top, the decision maker, whether it's again at the side of the system, the government, the healthcare, the whatever is the top in whatever country, because that can also differ, that you have a clear mandate to close that gap in women's health, whether it's research, the treatment, now. Not, you know, not in 123 years, not in 2040, but now. So having that clear dedication, because we've seen it so many times. You need, if you really want to have that change, you need that dedication. You need to basically decide, like, this is the direction that we are going.
You're mentioning a mandate. What if it's, could it be a law?
Yeah.
An enforcing law?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's like, yes, that the example, for example, of the menopause from 2027 in the UK. That is, we see it as well now. The companies are way more interested in anything around menopause because, so UK is giving an example from, next year, every company, 250 employees and above, needs to have a policy about menopause. Yeah, so sometimes it's a law, yes.
Last words from your side, an invitation to anyone who's listening for the 24th. Stage is yours.
Thank you. Well, just join, be part of it, and it's observe and let it sink, and then come by and let me know how you experience that, because it's. You know, some things you just have to do. It's not about listening or reading or watching. You just have to do. And that part is one of those things. You have to feel it. So
we will leave the link in the show notes. And thank you, Kasia, for today.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
Thank you for spending this time with us. Perhaps something from this conversation is still settling. A perspective, a feeling, or a question that arrived without asking permission. That's often how meaningful change begins. Stories have a way of traveling beyond the moment they are told, finding their way into conversations,
decisions, and chapters still unfolding. If someone comes to mind whose path feels in motion, pass this episode on. And if the desire for more clarity, direction, and alignment has been quietly growing in the background, there's a space called the Clarity Intensified Track, an open door for those moments when reflection starts asking to become movement. Until next time, take this with you gently and see what stays with you.